open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, and welcome.
You almost did it.
I almost did it. I was going, well, what's up, everybody? And welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Back after the nice holiday weekend full of sun and a lot of swimming and cookouts. A little small ball. The Cavs going to the NBA Finals. We know their opponent will be the Golden State Warriors. We'll talk about that. The Browns back at work here in Berea, their last week of OTAs as they wrap up today, tomorrow, and Thursday. And then the final off-season phase before training camp will be the following week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the mandatory mini camp. On our show for you today, we're going to have Xavier Cooper, the Browns' second-year defensive lineman. He is going to be live with us in studio in our first hour. We're also going to hear from Browns running back coach Kirby Wilson and Browns special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. That'll be at around 2 and 2:30 respectively. We're going to talk as well as our position group confidence rankings in terms of, we're going to start with the offense today and just kind of say, you know, how confident are we? Rank the positions in the order of confidence and just kind of talk a little bit about each position group on the offensive side of the ball. But Matt, let's talk about, first of all, hope you had a great weekend.
I did.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. The weather cooperated. It looked at one time like it was going to rain a lot, and it was beautiful here.
We made a trip to Kelly's Island for a birthday party on Saturday.
That's right.
And there was about a 4 or 5 hour window, which was the window to have the party, and it was open and it was perfect. And then we tried to come back on the ferry and the monsoon started.
Oh no.
So all in all, it was a very good weekend. Like you said, a lot of sun, a lot of friends, some cookouts, some drinks. No small ball for me, but I hope I have some coming in my future.
Yes, we got to get you out on the lease. Gibbs, how was your Memorial Day weekend?
Horrible.
I'm sorry. Why?
Because I got a wedding in 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks.
This way it should be an exciting time.
It is to a certain extent, except when you have to get your house ready because the rehearsal dinner's there on Friday. And Sunday, there's a big party for everybody before they head out of town. And you have a lot of housework. No less than 9 or 10 hours every single day, either in the yard, on the house.
What could there possibly be to do for that many hours in a day?
I didn't have one beer this weekend. It was rough. It was rough.
What? Okay, walk me through these 9 hours. What are you doing?
We have a lot of property.
Okay.
So you got to mow. Mowing takes at least 2 or 3 hours because it's literally 2 acres.
Okay.
Then you're
are you sitting on something or are you pushing something?
It's a zero turn mower riding.
So, I mean, I feel like that should be.
That sounds like fun. If you start consuming alcohol, which I've been known plenty of times to do on that, by the time you're done, not a whole lot else is getting done. And I
can see that.
Yeah. Especially if you've been on there for a couple hours. You know, it's trimming back trees, putting in the garden, putting up the swimming pool, because the pool's got to be up and ready to go for this. You know, we have a breezeway, repainting all that, cleaning out the garage, cleaning out the back shed, getting everything ready. I mean, it was literally wake up in the morning, start work, go to sleep, wake up, do it all over again for 4 straight days. On Friday night, Monica looked at me and she goes, "You're going to be more excited to go to work on Tuesday than maybe ever."
Was she right?
Yes. By yesterday at like 4 o'clock. And that's not to say I don't enjoy coming to work, but on a holiday weekend, I should be boozing. I should be playing golf.
Yes.
I should be in the pool.
Yes.
I did none of it.
None of those things.
None. No cookouts. Nothing.
We
have, you know, because we're a glutton for punishment in terms of when we do our wedding. My oldest stepdaughter turns 16 on Friday or on Saturday. So, like, preparing for the Sweet 16 Festivus on top of the wedding, and it is, there's a lot going on.
You're so, wait, if you cut the grass this weekend, Are you not going to have to cut the grass multiple times before?
Well, that's the thing. When do you cut the grass again? And it's only one. It's one final cutting. I'm not doing another one. So, like, I did it on Friday. I'm going to let it go for a week and some change, probably a week from yesterday. On Monday, I'll do it. And it'll be ready to go by Saturday.
Man.
By Friday, I should say. It was literally a full weekend. And, again, it's not something that we didn't know. Like, the kids were at their father's, so Monica and I had – we had 3 pages of stuff that we had to get through and get done. Stuff inside the house, some paintings,
some touch-ups.
How many
of the things on those pages did you volunteer to list, like were your ideas of listing?
I'm fairly confident maybe one or two. But it wasn't – I mean, it was stuff that needed to get done. She was right. I'm just in denial over it.
Does it help you or hurt you the way that it being the Warriors versus the Thunder?
It hurts.
That's worse that they're in.
It hurts because they're in Cleveland during the wedding weekend.
Right.
So yesterday I sent an email out to everybody. I was like, if you have not gotten a hotel room yet, you better do so before the end of tonight's game. Because a good chance you will not get a hotel room in this city on that weekend.
That's a good point.
So I have done all I can. If you didn't get a hotel room, shame on you. And you may not stay at my house.
And there it is. They could sleep in your grass, though, probably.
That's fine. Hey, I got plenty of room for tents.
A little tent town.
A little tent town. It was a very long weekend. There was not a lot of fun. I told Monica, I said, you should enjoy this now because after June 11th, I might not do anything again for the rest of the summer.
I think you've earned that, it sounds like.
We both have earned it. We both have been working very hard. But it was a long weekend.
All right.
I'm hoping everybody else had a much, much better weekend.
Yeah, I certainly had a good weekend. It was fun. Got to do some swimming with the kids. Like I said, a little small ball, some cookouts, some cornhole.
Wilhelm, what was the party like? It was like a Star Wars theme. I saw a post from you, and I was like, oh, I wonder what
that's how was
like
it?
On
it was
Kelly's
awesome.
Island. Like, what was that?
The Van Meters are great family friends of ours. Their son, Tommy, they do their annual, birthday of his. Last year was Ninja Turtle training. This year was Jedi training. So they went out and got outfits for all the kids, like a little, Joanne fabrics. They cut cloth white for the girls, like tones of brown for the boys. Went and got rope. So they, had the belts on. They got the pool noodle lightsabers for every kid.
Nice.
Short ones for the youngsters, the longer ones for the bigger kids. They did like a relay, like these fill up these little R2-D2 relay races, to fill up cups with sand because they have like a beach volleyball court. Then they had like they had water balloon contest, but they had like a ginormous Death Star like on a board, and you had to like break the Death Star, destruct the Death Star. And then they had the life-size stormtrooper balloons, hung on a yard line, tied up. So the kids just went to town. I got videos of my kids with their lightsabers beating the crap out of these balloons, stormtrooper balloons. But they're knocking their legs off. I mean, these kids. You want to see rage? These kids were raging on these balloons. And then lastly, Mark and his brother, who comes in from Chicago, they disappear as the kids are fighting these stormtroopers, and they come in dressed as a stormtrooper and dressed as Darth Vader. They came in on one of his one of those Razor, off-roading vehicles that he has over there in Kelly's Island. And then every kid got an opportunity to fight Darth Vader, one-on-one, and they just replaying the music. No, and Darth, of course, dies on the ground. But I mean, it was amazing. The food was awesome. The weather window was perfect just for the party. We missed our window and tried to make it back, and we got stuck getting rained on the boat. But we were inside on the
boat. Sounds like a pretty cool festivity.
It was. It was really cool. They do it really big.
Yeah.
The other son has a November birthday, so he gets something indoors.
Okay.
So it's never
as good.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so the weekend's in the books, and what we know coming out of it is that it will be the Cavs and the Warriors again in the NBA Finals. And I got to tell you, I feel like this one could go either way, but apparently I'm in the minority. And when you get into the analytics people, 538 said it's basically 70%, 30% in favor of the Warriors. So that's, they have better than 2x chance. The ESPN BPI said that it's 75-25 in favor of the Warriors. And what is amazing to me is that according to ESPN BPI, it is more likely, 26%, more likely that the Warriors will win this in 5 games than the Cavs will win it at all.
Okay, so walk me through some rationale, I guess you could say. I know you're mind-boggled by these statistics, but LeBron has Kyrie and Kevin Love, which he didn't have last year, okay? And so you would imagine that the odds might shift, not in our favor in regards to winning it, but be closer to 50-50. And is it because we've only been tested by the Raptors in 2 road games and no one else? Because of the way we played in the regular season, how hot and cold, or what, the 2 chances against the Warriors and we got spanked in both? Or the Warriors rode to the play, through the playoffs has just been that much more significant as the West is more talented.
It takes into the strength of the opponent, the pace of the game location, distance traveled, rest, preseason expectations. There's a billion different factors that go into it. And each team chance to win each remaining game on the schedule is used to play out the entire NBA season 10,000 times. Now, so that's what they have. They think that it is that likely on their BPI. 538, which has done their model, believes that it is, as I said, what, 70-30?
Yes.
And this is just based on their analytics and models of how of what they see. I don't know. And I know, Gibbs, you were saying before we got on the air that everybody thinks that it's pretty much the experts as well say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's without being too negative, you know, there are a number of guys that say, hey, it's going to be a good series. It's going to go at least 6 games, but the Cavs aren't going to win this series. And it's nothing that I'm saying, but, you know, look, we made it to the finals. Whatever happens, happens. That's my theory that I'm taking into it. I'm hoping to God they end the curse. I'm hoping beyond hope that they win it all. Whatever, we got here. So we did what we were supposed to do. Now let the cards fall where they may.
Right, and the Warriors did what they're supposed to do.
Yep,
and
exactly.
We all got the rematch. Essentially, we all wanted with the taste that we had in our mouth after last year's finals. But, and the one thing that I I'll ask both of you, do you think that percentage would be skewed slightly more towards 50-50 or at all in our favor had we not lost those 2 games in Toronto and been undefeated going into the finals?
I don't think so.
I don't think these
metrics that they use take it into account at all.
Okay.
Like the war for the 538 one, I know that they're up from where they were entering the playoffs, and now it's 72%. My goodness.
It just changed.
I mean, I guess
that's for the first game.
The thought process being, number one, how big a factor is Kevin Love going to be? Because, and I tried to say this on my Saturday show with Brian Windhorst, I go, in my opinion, the NBA Finals are going to go how Kevin Love goes. You know, when he was in that funk in Toronto for those first 2 road games against the Raptors, he didn't play well, and that team did not do well. They did not look good. They did not play good, and it became a series. I worry about him defensively. Golden State's going to go at him. They're going to attack him. And they're going to try to force the Cavs to get him out of the game because he's a defensive liability. And then who guards Klay Thompson? Who's guarding Steph Curry? I mean, if Kyrie's on one of those two, it's going to take away from his offensive game.
Yeah.
I think that's what the experts are saying.
Sure.
Matchup-wise. Now, the same could be said the opposite direction. Who's going to guard Kyrie Irving the way he's playing right now? That's going to take away from their game. But most of the experts say the Golden State just has too many guys and we have too many defensive liabilities.
I mean, so they also think that it is more likely that the Warriors sweep the Cavs and the Cavs win in any possible scenario, game 4, 5, 6, or 7.
What do you mean?
They have a 12% chance of the Warriors sweeping the series. This is how they – this is ESPN's VPI.
I think 12%, that's ludicrous to think that
– ludicrous.
To think any sweep is coming on either side.
They have 12% Warriors sweep. For the Cavs, 2% win in 4, 4% win in 5, 11% win in 6, and 8% win in 7. They really believe that the most likely outcome is that this thing ends in 5 games with the Warriors winning.
5 games?
That is according to ESPN BPI, that has a 26% chance of happening.
You know what I would say to that?
That is wild.
Okay. I know the players have to play the games.
On our floor again.
That's what I was just going to say. If the the players are going to play this game, but if, and we are essentially a part of this community, and I know you may or may not use your tickets and go, our city, if we truly want to have win a championship, have to make that place at Quicken Loans Arena the most amazing place to play for, as a home team, and as worst as it could possibly get for an away team. In every, no high security guards shunning these guys, your transportation guy, you know, denying to wear Golden State Warriors anything while I'm driving your bus in the city of Cleveland. We need to do everything we can to make it miserable for Golden State to be here 3 consecutive games in a row.
It's
going to be an amazing series.
The finals are what? Isn't it still
2-3-2.
It is 2-3-2.
It is 2-3-2. Because of the whole travel constraints, and it's longer. You have additional days off between games.
Was it 2-3-2 last year in the finals?
Yes.
So when they won game 6, we had home court advantage last year?
No. Oh, no, Golden State was in the top seed.
Yeah, and game 6 was played in Cleveland. It's got to be. They won it in 6 games. I was there.
Well, I was there too. I'm just trying to remember.
So it's got to be the same then.
No, I've got the schedule right here. Thursday and Sunday at Golden State. It is.
Yeah,
it is.
They
two,
just
two,
added
one, one,
what
one.
They did was what.
That's
yeah,
my bad.
Yeah, what they did. Yeah, what they did is they added
extra days.
Extra days on the travel. There's always 2 days off between every travel game.
Yeah, because the media really complained last year, and even like the NBA personnel were like, we can't get from one city to another. It's costing us an arm and a leg to travel back and forth on short notice like this.
Yeah. Okay. 2-3-2. Come on, Gibbs. Yeah. That's why they think. That's why they think the Cavs winning in 6 is the most likely outcome for the Cavs if they're going to win, because that would be a home game. So basically what they're saying is, for that to happen, for the Warriors to win in 5, they have to win 2 at home. They have to take one of the 2 here and then end it in game 5.
Yep.
Which actually, when you say that out loud, doesn't seem that crazy, but that's crazy.
It's going to go at least 6. You have a healthy Cavalier team. You have, for the most part, a healthy Golden State team. There's no excuses now. That's what I love the most. Like, everybody that last year said we didn't win because, you know, think about what we would have had, what we could have, should have, would have, all that stuff. Well, now you're healthy. Now you got to get it done. No pressure. We're all counting on you.
Agreed. There's tons of pressure. What do you guys think about those hats with the giant F on them?
The gray?
Yeah.
I saw one in person. They're all right. Didn't make me want one.
Initially, I thought I liked them, and then the more I looked at them, I don't like them.
The gray one with the
Giant F.
Love it.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I actually bought the Adidas one that's already, like, shaped. It's not the flat brim. I can't do the flat brim.
Pull it off.
It looks a little off. I go with a curved. Nice golf hat. Hopefully, I will get it this week. Hopefully, I'll play golf again soon.
I just feel like the letter F has such a negative connotation.
It's the finals. It's
failure.
It.
No.
It does.
It's
an interesting hat. I do like the gray color, though. It's going to be crazy. What do you call us up? We can talk about this Cavs thing. I think it is ludicrous. And now the Warriors may well go out and win it in 5 games, and then I'll feel like you can say that I told you so. But I think it's ludicrous to think that that is the most likely of all the possible outcomes, that a Warriors win 4-1 in this series right now is the most likely outcome when you've got LeBron. I mean, that seems crazy to me. By the way, I also want to say, isn't it amazing that Damon Jones finds his way into the front of every celebration video and every interview and everything. He's just right
he's
there.
He's an idiot.
Eamon Owens, no D, no J.
Yeah, that was from the Roadman, right?
It's a Roadman. It's a Kenny Rhoda special.
Yeah, a special. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, call us up 216-578-0850. We can talk about skids. Like, do you guys really think that it's – I mean, does anybody – I know we're in Cleveland, so we're going to be biased. But, I mean, it just seems crazy to me to think that the Cavs would go down in five games in the finals. It just seems ludicrous.
They put up a better fight with less last year.
Yeah.
And Wendy said it this morning on the Really Big Show. He goes, there are people in the Golden State organization that said Cavs were a better team simply because of the defense last year with Tristan Thompson and Delly in the game over Kyrie and Love. Tyronn Lue has been... Hey, this is your time. This is where you make or break your career. No pressure.
You'll be crazy. Wild ride. All right, everybody had a good weekend. Let's get together here. 216-578-0850. We'll get into our Browns position on the offensive side of the ball. Some of the confidence in those position groups. We'll hear from the running back coach, Kirby Wilson. Running game coordinator, I should say, Kirby Wilson. Also, we'll update you on some Browns news and much, much more here when CBD returns.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you. We're going to go to the phone lines now. And Gibbs, we were just talking in the break. I just think if the Cavs lost in five games, I mean, where do they go from there? I mean, I feel like the city would be unhappy, but where would they even go as an organization?
All right, you lose in five, I don't know. I don't know how you would recover. I think personally, it would be worse if you lost in seven.
I don't understand how they're like. How is that even the most likely?
That they lose in five?
That is, according to ESPN's BPI, that is the most likely of all the possible outcomes.
You got to get one of these first two.
That's what I said.
If not, then yeah, there's a possibility it's over in five. But I don't. It's going at least six, folks. And it is going to be an up and down, topsy-turvy 2 weeks. You're going to have highs.
You really are.
You're going to have low of lows. What? And you just got to know that it's
what he just
long
said.
Trip.
I think that this entire city is going to be like, you said topsy-turvy is the perfect word because, like, after a Cavs win or the day of a Cavs game here in Cleveland, you can interact with somebody. And it'd be so pleasant and so uplifting. And then the next day after a loss or a loss out of Golden State, that same individual can be like the devil, you know, just because this city is going to be on the edge of its seat for the next 2 weeks.
So I'm going to try to find a positive spin on these numbers. So it's 75%, 25%, right? If it ends in five games or fewer, they believe that the Warriors have a 38% chance of winning and the Cavs only have a 6% chance of winning. So if it goes in games four or five, they believe that it is going to be an easy win for the Warriors, 38-6%. Now, if it goes six or more, though, it's 38% again for the Warriors, 19%. So it's almost only a 2-1 ratio if they can get to six games, which is better than, I guess, a 3-1 ratio as it is overall. All right, let's get to Reg in Youngstown. Xavier Cooper slated to join us here very, very shortly. Reg, welcome to the show.
Hey, good. Nice to be talking to you guys.
Likewise.
Haven't talked to you in a little bit there. Hey, listen, I just want to say a couple of things. Let me get it out. One is the fact that on Mike and Mike's show, Matt, it was showing in general that the Cavs, 51% picked the Cavs on their show to win it, over 49.
Wow.
Right there. And the other thing is I would like if you guys can explain it in general. I mean, you guys – our Cavs fans too, but I'm getting so tired of hearing about Steph Curry, man. I mean, he can shoot. I give him, he got a little bit of game as far as his offense shooting, but he's not a good defensive player. He's not a good defensive player at all. He's not a rebounder, you know, in general and stuff, but yet they still say, well, he won it and that. I mean, I think, man, it's just ridiculous. I think LeBron is definitely the best player going in the game right now. And I just don't understand and get tired of hearing about Steph Curry, man.
Well, he is, Reggie, the defending NBA champion and the back-to-back NBA MVP. So people are probably going to talk a little bit about Steph Curry. All right, let's talk about Xavier Cooper, who is joining us now in studio, the Browns' second-year defensive lineman. Xavier, man, welcome to the show.
How y'all doing? Thanks for having me.
We're very happy to have you. How are things going for you here in year two, and how different does it feel to when you came in as a rookie?
Man, you know, things are going a lot faster, actually, to be honest. You know, he's speeding it up, but, you know, I like everything he's talking about, and, you know, I think we're rolling in the right direction right now.
And how has it been just in what you've absorbed thus far? We had Ray Horton up last week. Just learning the nuances of his defense and what's going to be asked of you in this defense.
To be honest, I think they just want me to, you know, be able to play a lot of snaps and run to the ball. You know, Coach Horton said the other day he likes big men who can run. So, and I think, you know, we got a lot of big men who can run. So, you know, the competition will definitely be high in camp. You know, my job is, you know, like I was drafted to do, is get after the quarterback. So I hope to be able to do that in this defense.
What about this defense from where? Are you lining up in different places? What's different for you specifically in this defense?
Well, to me, you know, last year I played every position, defensive end, three technique and nose. I'm doing the same thing this year, just playing a whole bunch of spots. But I think they're going to put me in the right, you know, spots to get after the quarterback. And, you know, that's all I can ask for is the opportunity.
Sure.
Sure. And you talked about getting after the quarterback. At what point do you personally, and you might have them now, just start understanding the system and also start setting goals for yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, I want X amount of, you know, pressures or quarterback hits or X amount of snaps, or what percentage of defensive snaps do I want to play? What do you have for yourself personally?
I think, you know, there's three things I talked to Coach Horton about when he asked me my goals, and one was become a starter, two was to, you know, help the team win, and three was, you know, be a dominant player in this conference. You know, like Hugh said today, this is the best conference in professional football. So if you could dominate here, you could dominate in the other conferences. So that's definitely a goal of mine, is to be a dominant player.
And get after the quarterback. Some good ones in this conference with Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, and Andy Dalton. Now, your former teammate, you guys were together briefly last year, Billy Wynn, we tweeted out that you were in studio, said to say hello and said we should ask you to rap for us.
Oh, no.
Are you like a legit MC?
I mean, I can spit a little bit, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, we on the radio.
We're on the radio. Okay. Well, that's usually where the music happens.
PG for y'all.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Maybe one of these days. So this is one of your hidden talents, and you would list this as a...
Well, yeah, and I'm a food critic as well, so that's another thing.
Okay. What's your favorite place to eat here in Cleveland?
Favorite place? To be honest, I haven't really been a lot of places in Cleveland. I would say probably I like... right now, what is the spot that we went to the other day? It's right across the street from the steakhouse in Crocker Park. Yard House.
Yeah, yeah, I went to Yard House this week.
Yeah, Yard House is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. But I need to definitely check around the city. I'm still getting familiar with a lot of areas.
What's your go-to meal?
My go-to meal at home, I make lasagna.
Okay.
It's my mom's recipe. So
okay.
Yeah.
Lasagna. So if you had to go with one thing for the rest, this is your
the
final
rest of
meal.
My life?
Yeah, lasagna.
It would probably be lasagna or like teriyaki chicken. Yeah.
Or teriyaki chicken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No steak?
Nah, just I don't eat red meat. I'm just chicken and fish
guy.
So yeah.
All right. What's your favorite fish?
My favorite fish, I would say just, you know, probably salmon. I would say salmon, because you can go to that anytime, really.
Okay. All right. I'm an ahi tuna man myself.
But I'm Pacific Northwest, so
yeah.
You know,
I was gonna say
about the seafood.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you do. All right, so I like this. One of these days, we're going to get into this rapping. We're going to figure out a way to tap into this. So is this something
we'll
that you do?
Sell it for the Browns Foundation or something.
Yeah, well, so
rapping with X.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We can
get that going, yeah.
Or maybe an Inside Cleveland Browns segment.
Browns Radiothon.
Yeah.
You know, we can sell that.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
I like where you guys are going with this.
Yeah. When have you always been rapping? Is this something you do in the locker room ever since you were high school?
No, I just think it's just something, you know, back in high school, we just buy time, you know, just playing around, just joking around in the locker room, just something me and the guys did. And then in college, we did the same thing. And, you know, it's not how, you know, college is much different from the pros, because, you know, everybody's, you know, strictly business in and out, you know. But it was just something to pass time, you know, just, you know, some camaraderie with the guys.
All right. So other than yourself, then we'll get out. We'll leave you alone on this topic. Other than yourself, who's the best rapper on the team?
The best rapper on the team? I don't know. I haven't heard too many.
Nobody else
rap.
Comes with
no,
you?
I haven't heard too many people rap. I'd probably say K-1. K-1
okay.
Williams. KK got bars. I give it to KK. He got
okay.
bars.
K-1 Williams. All right. Very good. So obviously, you know, you're talking about with Hugh Jackson, the energy and everything, as we get back to some football talk here. What is that kind of the biggest difference, just the way practice is conducted, the way that he kind of commands everything, the pace?
One thing, you know, is that I recognize is the discipline. To be honest, I was telling my mom that. She was asking me the same thing. You know, what's the big difference? I was like, it's a lot of discipline. Like,
okay.
He's demanding a lot out of us. And if you're not, you know, if he's not going to get that out of you, then you already know what the rest of that is going to, you know, equal to. So I think it's keeping us all on our toes and just competing every day. But it's a lot more discipline. So I like that, too. So I come from, you know, I watched the state Mike Leach. He's old school. So, you know, Coach Leach was a disciplinary, you know, if it's either his way or the highway. So I don't really mind that, because that leads to good things.
It definitely does. And I guess along those same lines, like, how comfortable are you? Have you embraced the dog pound? Have you embraced, you know, the city of Cleveland, which you said you kind of have? But also just understanding where this organization sits right now and how cool it is that being drafted last year, you didn't walk into success. Yeah. You had some struggles, mm-hmm. you know, as a team. I'm sure learned a lot as a rookie. Definitely. But now with Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson, and the mentality now shifting, this is going to be, it seems to me like it's going to be a very special place in the next few years.
No, it is. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm a homebody, so I try to get out more, you know, but I like being in the house. But, you know, as I, you know, growing on, you know, people in Ohio, it's just the passion they got for football. And in Washington, you know, I can talk about Washington because I'm from there. You know, Washington just now got big on football with the Seahawks.
Sure.
But here it's like everything. So, you know, to me, when I go out there, I always, you know, I'm playing for, the name on my back, number one, and then the rest of the players. But that dog pound, you know, it's something passionate about here. When I got people that come from Washington and they sit in the stands, they're like, man, these fans is crazy. So I'm like, no, I know they know about you. They I had a fan come to my house, you know, 2 weeks ago, knocked on the door, asked for an autograph. I'm like, dang, how do you know where I'm at? But that's how the fan base is. So, you know, it definitely you know, motivates you to go out there and play that much harder for these people, because, you know, they riding for us for real. We got a real good fan base here.
Was that a special game for you when you went back to Seattle last year?
Oh, yeah, man, that was special, because I remember, you know, when I was super young, you know, just going to the games, just watching these guys play. I was like, man, one day I'm gonna be here. And then, you know, walking through that tunnel, I definitely had goosebumps that game, for real.
That is a pretty unique place to play. That stadium is loud.
Man, I played there many times, and it was loud. It was loud, for real.
And I didn't like it. I mean, I was standing in the end zone minding my own business, trying to do the sideline reporting on the radio, and they scored a touchdown, and all of a sudden I'm getting pelted with the Skittles by the people out of the car. I'm like, what is going on, man? What's the deal?
Man, I'll tell you. But to be honest, man, I got to get on the Seahawks fans, because they wouldn't like that growing up.
The Dave Craig era did not inspire them like this era.
I don't remember the 12th man being so loyal, but hey, yeah, that's just what
that's
it
what
is.
Success
happens
when
you're
right.
Yeah. You're right.
So imagine what it's going to be like here when you guys are doing that.
It's going to be confetti everywhere. So.
Yeah, it's going to be. It will be crazy. Talking with Xavier Cooper, the Browns' second-year defensive lineman. And now you look in your defensive line room. It's a pretty young group.
Yeah.
All in all, I mean, now Desmond Bryant, clearly the elder statesman. Yeah. But you know, last year you and Danny come in, and now this year Carl Nassib comes into that room. What's it like going from being the youngest guy in the room to, hey, wait, now there's a rookie over there that's coming in here?
Well, to be honest, I guess they still deem me as a rookie until game four. So, you know, whatever, though. But that's just something that we got in our room. But, yeah, man, I'm learning a lot. You know, I learned a lot. Shout out to Randy Starks. I learned a lot of knowledge from Randy Starks. You know, I sat by him every day, sat by him and Anthony Weaver. And I just learned, you know, about, you know, different, you know, offensive sets. And I think it's helped me this year. And, you know, and then Coach Nunn coming in has really, you know, taught me to just focus on my technique. There's a lot of things I can do with my athletic ability, but if I focus on technique, I can be that much better of a player. So, and then, you know, we got John Hughes and, you know, Danny, and just being able to, you know, always talk to Danny when times are, you know, hard last year for both of us. You know, I think we still carry that relationship to today. So it's a good feeling in that D-line room, for real.
Good. I referenced a few moments ago, like, your personal goals. Now that we've gotten to, like, the group itself, do you guys have a specific role in this defense, and also have either goals that you've given yourself, you know, the players that make up that room, or has the coach set goals for you guys going into this season?
You know, I think Nunn, you know, as you guys know, it's history. He's coached on some really, really good defensive lines. One of them, you know, being, you know, the New York Giants when they won the Super Bowl, Justin Tuck, O.C. Manure. So I think him coming in, I think that gives us a little bit of motivation because we're like, hey, we can play too. So you're coming to coach some great guys too. But I think right now there's not a lot to be said because we got to go put it on film. So
sure.
I think a lot of guys in our room, we know what the expectations are, and that's that. We got to go meet them.
So you mentioned something that you're focusing a lot on technique, and the Coach Nunn's mm-hmm. big on technique. And we had Joel Bitonio, and he said Hal Hunter huge on technique. Huge. Is this coaching staff, you say, more technique focused than you're used to?
Like I said, that ties into discipline to be able to, you know, have that focus day in and day out. Pad level, hands, those are things you know, constantly going over. And that's discipline. You're disciplined to your craft. So that's helped me a lot because, you know, last year I dealt with, you know, pad level. It's different coming from college to the NFL, going against, you know, guys like Castro and all these good players in our league. And now I'm like, hey, man, I got to get my hands right. I got to get my footwork right. And so they really focus on, you know, technique. So that's huge.
Is that one of the biggest changes going from college where you're incredibly successful as you were at Washington State, where you can maybe just be flat out better than the other person to coming in the NFL where everybody was at some point the guy that was better than everybody else?
Yeah, that's like the biggest thing. And then, of course, coming into the AFC North, come on, it's the most physical division in football. So that was like a wake-up call for me. I remember the first game we played Baltimore at Baltimore. And I was looking around like, okay, this is football.
Marshall
right here.
Yanda.
And this is downhill football. You know, these guys are not gonna lay off you. You know, when we play other teams, you know, West Coast offense, it's, you know, flash and dash, but this is real downhill football. So I was like, when I got out there against Pittsburgh and Baltimore, it was a different little switch you had to turn on those games. And I think our rookies will find out sooner or later how it is in a division. But you know, they'll either rise or they'll either fall. So that was something that me and Danny always talk about was playing hard in this division and playing hard every game, really.
Last one for me, and you talked about a switch that was hit, and I think that the emphasis on strength and conditioning this year, along with the addition of Hugh Jackson and, mm-hmm. and the whole football staff, how has that been with, I know, you know, Evan's been probably a big part of Danny's, you know, weight loss and, you know, putting on the muscle and so on and so forth, as he proclaims. But how was the offseason program treated you, and how different is it, and how more prepared are you going to be for this upcoming season?
Man, to be honest, this is one of the, you know, better, you know, strength programs I've been around. You know, I was at Washington State with Jason Lascalzo. He's a hell of a strength coach. And, you know, coming here, we focused a lot on, you know, functional strength, core stability, you know, injury prevention workouts. And those are the things I worked on in the offseason. So when we jumped here, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. But those things that, you know, really, really help, you know, because it's such a long season with 16 games, you know, 17, depending on if you go to the playoffs or not. You really got to take care of your body, and those are the things that I was working on this year, and they introducing more things to me. So I'm definitely excited every time they got a new workout for us, because I mean it's something new every day, so I like it.
All right, so you said earlier you're a homebody. So what do you like to do at home in your free time?
To be honest, I like to read. So
okay.
I do a lot of reading. I just actually finished. I graduated from Washington State this May.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so that was a big thing for my family. But yeah, I like to just read up on different things. You know, just, you know.
What's your favorite kind of like genre?
I'm reading up on a lot of finances.
Okay.
And the biggest thing, and I was Ron Brewer asked us to talk to the rookies last week, and you know, rookies had so many questions about finance. I think that was the biggest thing. You know, coming into college, we don't know about stocks and bonds, and you know, when we get, you know, now we're about to get a whole bunch of money, and they're about to hire a financial advisor, and then the financial advisor is going to be like, you know, I'm going to start investing your money. Well, when my financial advisor threw it at me, I was like, huh? I didn't know.
Right.
So I got this book right now.
It's good to know. Like, it's your money.
I'm reading this book. Warren Buffett essays, Corporate Governance, and it got the whole list from, you know, common stocks to, you know, all those things. So I'm reading up because
that's awesome.
You know, we got to know as football players. We have to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they can do some bad things with your money.
Man, we've seen it all.
We've seen it all.
Seen the percentage,
man. Yeah, the 30 for 30, certainly. Man. Xavier, great talking with you. One of these days we'll get you to rap for us here. or we'll let you can pre-produce it if you want, and then we'll air it. But I know that there's from Twitter I can tell people are very very much interested to see this talent of yours. But thanks so much. Best of luck this season as you finish up this phase of the offseason and get ready for camp in the fall.
Appreciate it.
All right, Xavier Cooper, the Browns' second-year defensive lineman with us. We're back with more Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. And I got to tell you, that was a delightful time there with Xavier Cooper.
It was.
Congrats to him on getting his degree, graduating from Washington State this past month. And it is smart. Is that one of the hardest things for a player when you come in? The financial aspect of it, because you go from being a college athlete where in theory you're not supposed to have money.
Correct.
To the NFL where all of a sudden you have a lot of money.
Yeah, and I think absolutely. What you do with it, because your mind, like anyone else, is imagine you won the lottery. The first thing you think is, by human nature, is I want to go buy any number of things, right? Based on whatever that, a car, a house, stuff, electronics, whatever it might be, right? You have to put it into perspective because of the way in which, you know, when you reach a certain tax bracket, what that money that you actually just put in your pocket, what it meant on paper and what it actually is. You know, oh, I made, you know, I got $1 million number this year. That means you're going to put about $550,000 in your pocket, okay? $450,000 going to the government. So, yeah, once you start to realize these little lessons, and again, a lot of it comes from the team's, you know, player development individual. Some of it comes through conversations with vets and what they did with their money, or stories that they share, sometimes good, sometimes bad, about what happened working with this guy. Or you'd be surprised. I bet a percentage of that locker room has their money with the same, a lot of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Good guys, you know, personal referral from another guy who feels safe, who you can trust. And the NFLPA and the NFL in general have really stepped their game up, even in the, what, 5 or 7 years since I've been, you know, out of the game, because there's been so many stories of guys getting swindled. But even most recently, I got, an email with a scanned document of a gentleman who was bamboozling some players, just taking money. But they want it out there. They want the name of this individual, what he's claiming to do with your money. So they're doing the best they can, but it is still on you.
Yeah.
The one thing I always said is you go from being a dependent, you know, and your mom and dad claiming you on their taxes, to being independent and you filing taxes. You know, if you do it the right way, I only had to pay 1 year. You know, I only had to pay out 1 year because they take the max. They force you to write off, you know, everything you can and file your taxes properly to get your money back.
Yes, the government becomes a big, somebody you didn't really know that much about, then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, you're like, who, huh?
Why are you taking all this money?
I just voted 2 years ago. Isn't that same thing?
Yeah. Shouldn't that get me something? yes. By the way, the Browns have promoted 6 and added 1 in their personnel department today. Sashi Brown announcing that the Browns have named Ken Kovach, the vice president of player personnel, Mike Seta, the director of scouting, Kevin Mears, the director of research and strategy, Chisholm Opar, the director of player personnel, Dan Sagney, director of scouting, Bobby Vega, director of scouting. Additionally, the Browns have named Glenn Cook, who spent the previous 4 years in Green Bay's player personnel department, as their new assistant director of scouting. Sashi Brown, very excited about the department as a whole and what they're doing here. And here's just a little background on those people. Ken Kovach has been with the Browns since 2013, spent the past 3 seasons in Cleveland's player personnel department as the director of football research. His first 3 seasons in the NFL were with the Dallas Cowboys, where he worked as the team's senior analytics manager. He came with Alex Shiner from the Dallas Cowboys as Alex Shiner tried to put a renewed focus on analytics here. Kovach has risen the ranks and is now the vice president of player personnel on a level playing field with Andrew Berry there. Sashi Brown saying Ken is an intelligent, critical thinker. He provides valuable leadership and input into our decision-making process and will continue to be a key component in our personnel department. Seta had joined the Browns scouting department in 2013 as an intern, was hired full-time in 2014, and has risen very quickly. In his new role, he will direct systems and processes that support the Browns scouting department. Kevin Mears now takes over as the director of research and strategy. Will be reporting right to Chief Strategy Officer Paul D. Podesta. Chisholm Opara, who has been with the team since 2009, is a very, 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 very competent scout who is going to be involved in a lot of the things here. Former wide receiver at Princeton with the Ivy League here. It's his 12th season, I'm sorry, with the Browns for Chizum Opara. And he is going to work directly with Dee Podesta as well on that side of player personnel department. Dan Sagne has been with the Browns since 2009, promoted to director of scouting. We'll focus on the pro side, where he has played a very, very good role with the Browns. Bobby Vega will be the director of scouting on the collegiate side. And Cooks, who joins from 2012, he was an evaluator of college and pro talents, and he is going to do that in this department as well. He was a highly regarded bright scout in Green Bay who will bring a fresh perspective to our group, and we're excited to have him on staff, said Sashi Brown. So six promotions, one addition to this personnel department.
Yeah, and you know what's very interesting to me, and I'll just go into detail about the last individual that is coming to us from Green Bay. For anyone that doesn't understand, look at Ted Thompson's makeup, how he likes to build a roster. So if I find it very interesting that we add a scout, but of all the places, you know, a Packer, a Patriot, a Raven guy who are draft-laden, young talent, not very active in free agency. So he's going to bring, and as you heard Sashi say, the experience of how Green Bay does business.
Yep.
Because how they do business is different from everyone else. I think Julius Peppers is one, you know, free agent that Ted Thompson has brought in there that has stayed more than, you know, a year or two in Green Bay and actually made a significant amount of money. Otherwise, a heavy portion of that roster, I want to say 60%+ of that roster,
are
homegrown Packer-drafted players that they groom into talent that keeps them winning at a high level.
Yeah, and that's part of the philosophy they wanted to bring in. And I remember when the Browns were looking for the vice president of player personnel, which was basically the top talent evaluator, the job that was ultimately filled by Andrew Berry, a lot of people were hoping for Ron Wolf's son, who was in Green Bay, to come
bring that
Green Bay kind of philosophy in. Now they were able to do that here by adding Glenn Cook to the fold. So again, they promoted six and added a new person to the department, Glenn Cook, who spent the previous 4 years in Green Bay's player personnel department. He is the new assistant director of scouting for the Cleveland Browns. All right, that will do it for us in hour number one. Hour number two, we will kick off listening to Kirby Wilson, the Browns run game coordinator, and then we'll start to get into our position confidence on the offensive side. Still to come, Chris Tabor at 2:30, as well as your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Whenever you guys want to talk, we will talk with you here on CBD.